Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and these are the stories that you need to know about today. Is President Biden calling the people of India racists? Why would you do that? Also, there's an important message that's coming out of Berlin, and guess who's back? Oh, my goodness. George Santos has reintroduced himself in drag. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. So here's what I'm going to start with. President Biden has come out and essentially insulted the nation of India. And by the way, they don't like it. They don't like what he's saying, right? He's calling them xenophobes. Xenophobes, which is really another way of saying prejudiced people, maybe even bigots. I mean, those words are often used interchangeably, right? By the way, he's also including Japan in this insult. And of course, for good measure, he throws in Russia and China. But then again, he says that every day when he wakes up. So here's what he says. Let me put it up on the screen for you, and I'm going to read it for you. Here's what he says. He says, why is China stalling so badly economically? Why is Japan having trouble? Why is Russia? Why is India? He says, because they're xenophobic. They don't want immigrants. Immigrants is what makes us strong, he goes on to say. I guess he meant what makes us strong. Regardless, this is really fascinating. Coming from a man who is backing what many people around the world would be calling a genocide. I mean, what's going on in Israel right now? There's a group of people who are saying, we don't want you here, and they're bombing them and killing them to the tune of 25, 30, 35,000. I mean, those aren't my numbers. Those are the official numbers. I mean, that's not xenophobic? I can't help but ask. Manila, as we start the show, first thoughts.
So, Rick, we got to point out that Biden making these comments right at the start of AAPI Heritage Month, right here in the United States. This, I think, was another gaffe that left the national security spokesman, John Kirby, scrambling to clean up another one of Biden's messes. We should point out Japan and India are two very important U.S. allies in Asia. It's baffling that Biden would go on this random attack like this during a campaign event. And as of yet, no immediate reaction or comments from Japanese or Indian officials. I don't know what they would say to this, Rick.
Yeah, it's funny that he would do something like this and do it at the very same time that there's this question about this controversy between, obviously the Palestinians and the Israelis and the new attacks on Rafah, for example, where there are now actual pictures of this happening. By the way, there's another part to this that we probably should address, because meanwhile, the government of Benjamin Netanyahu, who is acting perhaps like one of the most xenophobic countries in the world, right? I mean, again, let me just pose the question. What can be more xenophobic than alleged genocide, right? So they're being defended right now, Manila, as you know, by Biden. He's not alone. The International Criminal Court, as we have been reporting, is considering charging and arresting Netanyahu and others in his government for war crimes and for what they call, again, alleged genocide. Well, a group of U.S. senators has just come out as we're preparing this show, and they're essentially attacking the court. They're attacking the ICC. Here's what we know. So I'm going to read it to you as it's being reported. In a terse one-page letter signed by 12 GOP senators, including Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Marco Rubio, Rick Scott of Florida, Ted Cruz of Texas, what a surprise, Tim Scott of South Carolina, the criminal court is being informed by these dudes that any attempt, listen to this, any attempt to hold Netanyahu and his colleagues to account for their actions, for what they've done in Gaza, will be interpreted not only as a threat to Israel's sovereignty, but to the sovereignty of the United States. These guys are actually saying that if you, the International Criminal Court, which the U.S. has praised many times in the past when they've said bad things about countries we don't like, they're saying if you mess with them, you're messing with us. And we're essentially declaring, I don't know, war on you?
So, Rick, from the language of these lawmakers that they're using in defense of both Israel and Bibi, you would think Israel was the 51st state. Now, as you say, about a year ago, the ICC issued an arrest warrant against Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia. This was lauded by these very same congressmen. Yes. Today, they are calling into question the validity, the merits of the court and its officials. Now, the House...
I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment there, because something you said there is very fascinating. I was doing my preparation for the show, as usual, like we have to do, and I was reading up on what's going on right now in Ukraine. And the other day, what caught my attention was this headline. I don't remember what, maybe New York Times or something, and it said, Russia attacks three more cities in Ukraine, levels, da-da-da, and it was, I thought, oh my God, what did they do? Did they drop a giant bomb on the city, da-da-da? And then it says at the bottom, one person was injured and taken to the hospital. One civilian was affected by the bombing in Ukraine by Russia. So it's this big, long article saying, Russia just attacked all these people and they bombed the city and they did it. And I'm saying, well, that must have been horrible. God, I hope people didn't die. I hope innocent people didn't die. One person, I think, had a broken arm and had to be taken to the hospital. Compared to what's happening in Gaza, Manila, come on.
Yeah. And then furthermore, I mean, this is kind of dogpiling, right? Because the House Foreign Affairs Committee Chair, Michael McCaul, the Republican from Texas, says sanctions legislation is in the works right now. And as we know, back in February, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas already introduced legislation to sanction ICC officials if they even bothered to open any probes or investigation into U.S. allies who are not ICC member states. So worth noting, the U.S., Russia, China, and Israel are not ICC member states.
That's fascinating, and I'm glad you brought that up. By the way, according to Twitter, something kind of fascinating may have happened overnight in Berlin. And we're trying to run this down, and whether it happened officially or unofficially, it's still something worth talking about. Some creative messengers may have figured out a way to either change the iconic Brandenburg Gate in Berlin, which we've seen a million times in all the World War II movies we all grew up watching, or maybe they did it in such a way so that they can promote it on Twitter. Either way, it's getting a lot of attention. The idea was, according to what they were intending to do, to show the Soviet victory banner. And I think do we have a picture of it, Victor? Speaking of victory, here's Victor showing us the picture of the victory banner. Thank you, Victor. There it is. See that? The idea is to show the rest of the world, especially the Western countries who have taken full credit. I mean, if you watch any movies, if you watch news reports, the Russians had nothing to do with World War II. The Nazis were defeated by, you know, the movie directors in Hollywood, Steven Spielberg, and the Brits. And what most people sometimes don't know here in the States is that, in fact, after the death of 27 million people in Russia, it was actually the Russian army that went into Berlin first. And that's what they're trying to say with this sign. And that's important, right?
Yeah, I mean, this Brandenburg Gate thing, this image that we're looking at, it's unclear if that is some sort of a Twitter hoax. But at the end of the day, it is Victory Day. Or 2 days, actually, May 8th through 9th, the commemoration days. Of course, in Berlin, Rick, if we're trying to rewrite history, in Berlin, authorities have banned all Russian flags, the Z logo, anything having to do with Russia. It's unclear if this is like a temporary law and if it's only applicable in Berlin or perhaps other surrounding territories or cities. But at least for the next few days, Berlin police are authorized to make arrests on this particular matter if anybody is sporting any sort of Russian emblem. Go figure. Yeah. Freedom and democracy, right?
Yeah, well, and by the way, look, we're here in the United States, and this is not to overhype or praise, you know, the Russians or their position, because, you know, they make as many mistakes as anybody else does, or any other country does, for that matter. But this is a big deal to them. This is a big deal for Russians, because after all, they did lose 27 million of their own citizens when they were invaded by the Nazis. They had to defend their own country. We are great people in the United States, and we too played a great part in World War II, but we were never attacked by the Nazis. No American ever had to deal with some Nazi coming into his room or his bed or killing his wife or et cetera, or his children or himself, right? Here in the continental U.S. anyway. So here's President Putin.
We were and we will be open to the strengthening of good relations with all countries which see in Russia a faithful and honest partner. And in fact, this is the majority of the world. We do not refuse dialogue with Western countries. The choice is theirs. Whether they intend to further restrain Russia's development to continue the politics of aggression, years of incessant pressure on our country, or to look for a path to cooperation and peace.
So again, look, again, this is not to be, you know, super pro-Russia or pro-Putin on this, but the point the man is making is too many times in our history, we've been pushed around, we've been invaded, we've been slaughtered, we've been massacred. Our perception is it's happening again, maybe not this time by Germany, but that's what we perceive was happening in Ukraine. That's what happened in other Western European countries, and we're just not going to put up with that kind of stuff. That's what I hear him saying. That oftentimes is interpreted by the New York Times and others as, oh, he's being a bully, right?
Not only that, but he says it plainly that his telephone line has always been open for dialogue and conversation. But somehow I think that gets retransmitted out to the world as he's prank calling us and he's going to come drop bombs.
All right. Speaking of pranks, are you ready? Because this is the highlight of the show. So you're not going to believe this. And I know many of you are watching us from all over the world and you're wondering what in the hell is going on in U.S. politics. But he's back, or she, no, she's back, right? She's back. Former U.S. Congressman George Santos, who used to deny his second persona, a woman named Katira Rivacci, where she would dress as a woman, I guess. And, well, the former Congressman Santos, this is hard to do. The former congressman, he is now admitting it's true that he sometimes dresses as a she under that name. So here, without further ado, is a video reintroducing us to Katira Rivacci.
Hey, Club Condo. It's your favorite, Katara. After 18 years in the closet, George Santos pulled me back out. Whatever. Anyway, I hear you're a bunch of little freaks out there, and you love to dance all night long like it's nobody's business. You know what? You gotta elevate it. Gotta make it more risque. You gotta make it more fun. Where's the zhush? I have an advice for you. How about put some wigs on, get some boas, and go have real fun. Let's see who whips your hair faster, you know, side to side, whatever. But y'all gotta stop being boring. Dave essentially thinks you're boring because he wants you all to be more risque. Mwah. All the love. I hope y'all enjoy it.
Mwah, Manila. You first, ladies first. I mean, I don't know where to go with this.
Well, thank you, Rick. I'll take it. So, I mean, what can we say about George Santos? I mean, he's a congressman that got pushed out under some very shady circumstances. People compare him to, like, the movie The Talented Mr. Ripley character. And then now we meet this alter ego, Katara Rivacci, his drag name. Katara, I got to admit, sounds really fun. I think I would rather hang out with Katara over hanging out with George Santos, because George Santos steals money from veterans' dogs for their surgery.
Oh, I knew you were. Here's what I think. I respect him more than I respect a lot of the people in Congress who are there now. You know why? Because I think they're all thieves and liars. Sure, George Santos is a thief and a liar, but at least he cops to it. He plays with
it.
He admits it. He owns it. Those guys do the same thing. They just don't do it in drag. Last time I checked. Thanks, Manila.
Thanks, Rick.
When we come back, we're going to be talking to Asia strategist Saurabh Gupta, who recently said the U.S. will likely continue treating countries like India and China and others like inferiors for some time to come. What does he mean by that? We're going to talk about it when we come back. You stay right there.
القاهرة لها طعم خاص ما تقدرش تلاقيه في أي حتة تانية. أنا فاكر كنا نمشي في الشوارع دي نفوت للمحلات والمقاهي ودور السينما.
السلام عليكم.
اللي كان طائر من كايرو ويست الى دمشق
غرب القاهره
50 سنة ومصر اتغيرت قد ايه؟ اتغير العالم واحنا اتغيرنا.
All right, this is a fascinating conversation. Let me read you what Sourab Gupta recently wrote. It is implausible, he says, not impossible, implausible, to expect that 200 years of Anglo-American dominance and a half millennium of Western ascendancy will be ceded graciously to a culturally alien great power protagonist. What he basically is saying is the U.S. is not going to give up its gig anytime soon. They'd be crazy to. I mean, it's good to be the king, right? Joining us now is the guy who wrote that, Sourab Gupta. And by the way, when you wrote that, you were referring to China. But I think nowadays, with the resurgence of India and the President of the United States saying Indians are all bigots or whatever he called them, it kind of fits there too, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It does. I mean, it was, I think, you know, Biden is indisciplined in his his talking and his references. But India is also on the rise. India is behind China. But remember, I mean, this year among the major economies, it's the one which is going to produce the maximum growth. I mean, close to 8%. And it's been growing fast. It can grow faster, but it's India's right up there. It's about 20 years, 25 years behind China. But I mean, in the larger scope of things, and I mean, seen across a century, across a millennium, I mean, 25 years is nothing.
Let's talk real quick about what he was trying to say. And I get it. And here's what we as Americans and as the world needs to understand. The United States has gotten really old. I don't know what the average person is in the United States, but he ain't a young chicken, okay? He's an old guy or an old gal, and they're in their 70s or something like that. Average American. And they're not breeding. Americans aren't breeding, so, you know, there's no new Americans coming about, which means all the jobs, the people who have to do the work and everything from laying brick to being nurses to being doctors are immigrants that are coming in mostly from Latin America. And that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good. India doesn't necessarily need that because India has a very, very young population. So it's a different economic model. And for the President of the United States not to know the simple thing that I just stated is somewhat disappointing, is it not?
It is disappointing. I'll make two additional points in that regard. First of all, India is still a fairly poor country. People don't immigrate to poor countries. They immigrate to wealthier countries. And they will immigrate to India down the line because India is also an English-speaking country. And English is, in some ways, the language of the world, if you want to, for upward mobility. So, I mean, people don't go to poor countries, and India is poor. That's one of the reasons. Secondly, one doesn't know it, but there are a huge number of illegal immigrants from neighboring countries right around India who are in India, which never gets talked about, which is it's a huge, enormous number. And that has been behind much of the friction, you know, the kind of majoritarian anti-Muslim frictions which are happening, because a lot of them are actually Muslims from Bangladesh who've landed up in India and has kind of altered the demographic complexion in India's east. So that there's that dynamic out there. But the final point I'd say is this, and this goes also with regard to China. India and China have been ruled for much of their histories by foreign dynasties, people who came from abroad. And the Indian and society adjusted perfectly well. They told the foreigners, you know, we have our society. You obey the rules of our society. You help our society flourish. You can be at the top of our society and you can lead us. And we've had African kings rule in India. Now you think about it. If there was a majority of African Americans and Latinos, would the white people turn over the keys of the kingdom to them? Would that be the case?
So what you're
That's
saying,
the question to ask.
No, so what you're saying is that not only based on the economic premises that we just created a moment ago that we just went through, but just as a people, the Indians are no more xenophobic than the rest of us. And we're all a little xenophobic. We all tend to stick with our own kind. But you can't say it's institutional, as the president seems to suggest it is.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you cannot say absolutely not institutional. And in fact, quite the opposite. As I said, these are tolerant societies, but they're also at this point of time, young societies, growing societies, trying to modernize, and they're poor societies. And at that point of time, it's kind of a dog-eat-dog world, and you're not that generous in terms of foreign immigrants. But immigrants, as I said, are not coming at this time because they are poor societies. And therefore, I think Biden was out of line. Now, I understand one of the points he is saying. I think part of the brilliance of the American system is the capacity to assimilate immigrants. And the United States is a modern new age country. And I think many of these old civilizations would learn, have useful lessons to learn. And this doesn't go for India and China only. I'd say Europe, too. To learn to be kind of not old age civilizations, but new age nations, and being trying to adapt immigrants and assimilate them, because that is a strength. And I mean, at the end of the day, it also has important economic dynamics to it, and helps kind of consolidate prosperity. But to say that these countries have natural prejudice, I think that's not just insulting, that's completely off.
But you know what it does? But you know what it does? And I think it shows that he's not conscious of a movement, a thing, something that is happening in the world right now that he should know about. As you and I have spoken about many times, and as we often talk about in the show, there's something happening in the world, and it's a prominence of the global South community. We do see suddenly countries like Russia and India having relations. That doesn't mean they don't have relations with other countries, but there's this consortium between China and India and Russia and Iran and Saudi Arabia, and I could go on. Brazil, there's all these countries who are forming this kind of alliance that says, God, those gringos or those Yankees or those Americans are kind of silly in the way they think. And here goes the president of the United States and says this, and you know what he's doing? He's pouring gas on the fire. He's giving them the gasolina. He's giving them more power for their own argument. And it just seems foolhardy for him to do that. Or does he just not know? Is he not educated?
No, I think it's nuts. I'd wish, first of all, Biden had a little bit more color in his own family. It's like white, first of all. So, I mean, he's not the best spokesperson of that. But as you talked about also in terms of people like think about the BRICS, those five countries, they just became 10 this year.
Yeah.
And they brought in Iran, Ethiopia, and Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. Argentina was offered. Argentina stepped out with a new president. It will come back at a later point. And there are a huge number of countries lining up to join. Think of something like the Shanghai Cooperation Organizations. You have Islamic countries out there like Pakistan. You have, of course, the Central Asian countries. You have a Sinic civilization, the Chinese. You have a Hindu civilization. You have India. You have, of course, Russia. And then you're soon going to have, at some point in time, I'm sure, Turkey joining. Think of it. I mean, the melange of civilizations. And it creates a natural tolerance. You know, thinking about Russia,
exactly.
People don't realize this as much.
What you just said. Creates a natural tolerance. Continue. I'm sorry.
A natural tolerance. Yeah. You know, when Imperial Russia, when it went across and went all the way to the Pacific Ocean, it realized at that point of time that there were many Islamic subjects out there. And therefore Russia is very tolerant actually to Muslims because it understands what an integral part they are of their society. And of course, you can go the other way and try to just slaughter and marginalize them, but working against your own interests.
Yeah.
Very few people understand that the SARS subjects were actually treated very benevolently
That's an interesting historic point, and we're out of time, and I apologize, Zora, but I wanted to say, I like your point about our president, God bless him, not having enough ethnicity in them. And then I was thinking, as I'm having a conversation with you, that you and I probably have enough ethnicity in us for the bunch of them. So it's great to be able to talk to you, if nothing else for that reason. Thank you, my friend. We'll look forward to seeing you again.
You're most welcome. Thanks, Rick.
Before we go, we do want to remind you of the thing we do, right? What is our mission here, right? We try and de-silo the world. We need to stop living in these little boxes, you know? Truths don't live in boxes, you know? And that's what we believe in, and that's our mission. And I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll see you the next time right here when we try and make a direct impact.